Now, you might have heard about this referendum that New Caledonia has just had. A couple of days back, the referendum was held. The question was, do you want New Caledonia to gain sovereignty and become independent? Well, spoiler alert, they voted no. New Caledonia is right off our shores, but as Australians, we don't often know a lot about the volatile independence movement that has been brewing ever since France took possession of the island in 1853. Even though voters didn't go along with it this time around, we actually might not have heard the last of this. Here to run us through why the referendum occurred is Denise Fisher. She's a fellow at the ANU College of Arts and Social Sciences, as well as a past Consul General to New Caledonia. Denise, thanks so much for chatting to us this morning.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Yes, thank you for having me.
Could you give us a little bit of a brief run-through of the history of the independence movement in New Caledonia for those who might not have heard any of this before?
Well, I guess if you go deep dark in the past, the French arrived in declared possession in 1853, and there were two major uprisings by the Kanaks. Obviously, the local people didn't take the taking of possession lying down. There were two major uprisings in the latter 19th century and the early 1900s. But then a genuine independence movement actually got off the ground well before World War II, which was a combination of the long-term European residents and the Kanak people who wanted more independence from France. World War II intervened. We had called for more independence, and de Gaulle called for a vote in 1958 to see whether people would stay within from the overseas possessions within a France promising more autonomy. They rolled that back over the subsequent years in New Caledonia, and civil war broke out basically by the 1980s. Partly the problem was that there's a nickel industry in New Caledonia. They have about a quarter of the world's resources of nickel. And in the 60s, the local people wanted to turn to a foreign company, Canadian company, in fact. And the French didn't like that, so they rolled back some of the autonomies they had already given. And at the same time, they brought in more people from other parts of France and the other islands overseas of France to outnumber the indigenous people and those who wanted independence. So frustrations really mounted. There was a four-year, effectively a civil war in the 1980s. By 1988, the French realised they had to change things, and they negotiated an accord which was supplemented and extended in 1998. Basically promising this vote. It's been a long time coming. And in between times, it must be said, certain transfers of responsibilities have been made.
Bless you.
And we have now arrived at this date. Certainly there's been a lot of change in the last 30 years. We can't, the French state has worked very closely with loyalists and with independence people alike. And in fact, it's a real model of innovative government currently going on in New Caledonia. But this vote has been promised, and the result is actually fascinating because what it demonstrates is that there is a genuine independence movement alive and well in New Caledonia. And I think that's been a bit of a surprise to many people.
So people didn't think that there was really any chance that there would be such a chunk of the voters wanting independence?
No, the mantra over the last 2 years, largely emanating from the pro-France side, has been it's going to be 60-40. Why should we even go ahead with this? We should defer it yet again. Bear in mind, this is a vote that's been deferred for about five decades. Why should we vote again or go to this and stir up potential trouble when we know it's going to be 60-40 at least? And a couple of the parties in the last few months have been saying, oh, it's going to be 70-30. There's no doubt. And so we have the vote. Contrary to all expectations, it was just amazing to watch the queues of people lined up. So many queues for 2 hours because so many people turned out. That's the first thing, and very peacefully. There was a little bit of stonings of cars and some burning of cars on Sunday night after polls closed, but the vote was totally peaceful. And people turned out in large numbers. They had over 80% participation. Now, this is amazing because there's no compulsory voting in New Caledonia. And for the last French parliamentary elections, 37% of the people voted.
Oh, wow.
Even in the last local assembly elections, 67% voted. So people knew that this was a historic day. And what is fascinating is that what was remarkable in those queues were the number of young Kanaks. who the indigenous people, because most of the independence supporters, not all of them, there are some European people who want independence, but most are indigenous Kanak people. And this lends a real edge to the result, because the result, instead of being 70-30 as some thought, it was 56.4% in favour of staying with France and 43.6% in favour of independence. It has given pause, indeed, to the pro-France groups to see this result. I don't think they expected it. I think they were much more confident. And it's not a bad thing that right now they have to have a second thought about this, because not only is there a 43% people who are opposed to remaining with France, but they are mostly Kanaks. And the evidence shows that many of them were young Kanaks. And I think that the to be fair, a lot of the pro-France supporters really believed that the young Kanaks would see the benefits of education, employment and so on that having a French tutelage gives them. And I think there's a bit of shock that even young Kanaks, first of all, that they would come out to vote in such numbers and that they would support the independence movement. So it vindicates, in a way, the very clever strategy of the independence supporters. Way back in 1998, when they negotiated the accords, they stipulated that they would only sign on to it if there was a three-prong referendum process. So long as the answer is no, there are to be three votes. This one, another one in 2 years' time, and one 2 years from then. So 2020 and 2022. This has vindicated their strategy. They will get another go in both of those periods. And at the same time, they negotiated that there should be a restricted electorate. Only those, all Kanaks and some non-Kanaks, are eligible to vote in these votes. Why? Because they stipulated that it should only be long-term European and other residents who could vote. In other words, not the French officials who are posted out there for four-year postings, you know, to administer the territory, newcomers who haven't had the same depth of attachment to New Caledonia. There are all sorts of incentives for people to come to New Caledonia and work. So they wanted to preserve the long-term residence. So that means that over the next two to four years, you're going to have a natural increase as 18-year-old young Kanaks come on board and are eligible to vote, whereas you're going to have a relatively static non-Kanak vote. So their hope is that they will be able to increase their vote in the next 4 years. And what this, the main import of all of this is that with the loyalists being a bit more sober by the results, and with the independents and the Kanak people being more confident of their position, I think it creates a very good basis for more dialogue. In other words, to make the dialogue process about the future far more important than the actual vote itself. Because the reality is you can't have a future for New Caledonia that doesn't take account of the 40% at least of the population who are Kanak and indigenous people.
And with these the next two elections that are going to be coming up for it, is it a best of three situation, or does yes vote only have to win once?
Once there's a yes vote, the place becomes independent. It's very hard to say what will happen. The majority has always been, in any of the votes we've had in the last 3 decades, any vote, whether it's been for the European Parliament or it's been for the local elections, the majority has always been pro-France. Whether there's ever a possibility of having a yes vote is not known, uncertain. And in a way, it's not a bad thing that it's uncertain, because it can motivate people to really go to the core of what they want. Because even when you talk to independence leaders individually, they do acknowledge that defence is expensive. You know, some of these really core sovereign responsibilities that France still has are very expensive. And maybe what they are looking for, and they all talk about this, they all talk about sovereignty and emancipation rather than capital I independence. So maybe they, in working, they've always said since the 1980s, after the accords of the 1980s, finishing the Civil War, they have acknowledged that they're not looking for a place solely for the Kanaks. They want to share their country on their invitation with those long-standing residents who are not Kanak, but on their terms. So it's possible that they can, around a discussion table, agree on a kind of a small I independence, which will mean the continuation of this common destiny, the collaboration with all communities to live in New Caledonia peacefully, but on the basis of a new contract which may define doubtless more autonomies from France. And for their side, it may be that the pro-France people, will reflect on this situation, learning the lessons of history, and may themselves be motivated to do a bit more talking and define a new future for New Caledonia. So that is my hope. The question of peace arises because for 30 years, we've been sitting in Australia blithely ignorant of what goes on in New Caledonia. And in many ways, even the violence that took place Sunday night, when you say violence, through cars being burnt, by the standards of the territory, that's not new. That this has been going on, low-level violence has been going on in New Caledonia for the last 30 years, low-level, which has been ignored by the Australian newspapers. there's a certain pattern of discontent, especially by young Kanaks who've been, motivated to do petty attacks against wealthy Europeans, for example, on an ongoing basis. The risk, of course, now is that we are at the beginning of the final stage of these accords, these agreements. Already the pro-France groups are saying, we've had our victory, we don't really need to go to a second or a third referendum. This is going to risk touching on sensitivities, so we mustn't have those referendums, just as they called for deferral of even this one only 18 months ago. So let's not go to the second and third referendum. This is very inflammatory for the independence people who have signed on in good faith to these agreements and who put this was a condition of these agreements. So it's a very fascinating time, and we're really only at the beginning of this final stage.
It's certainly going to be an interesting one to watch. Denise, thanks so much for chatting to us this morning.
It's a pleasure. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
That was Denise Fisher having a chat with us this morning about the referendum for independence that just happened in the nearby French territory of New Caledonia. She's a fellow at the ANU College of Arts and Social Sciences, as well as a past Consul General to New Caledonia.